What's up, family? It is August 9th, 2023. Welcome to this edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. I am Don Tony. For my Patreon family right now, they're like, wow, DT, you sound a hell of a lot better from yesterday. Yesterday, I was sick, man. After I did the Patreon show, I took my temperature. It was 101. I must add the 24-hour bug because today I feel a hell of a lot better. But still, we're going to have a little bit of a laid-back episode today. The format is going to be a little different. Some of you who have been around for a very long time may absolutely love what we're going to do tonight because it's kind of like the cornerstone of what I used to do and what put the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show on the map. And I'll explain what that is in a moment. First off, cheap plug, keep supporting the website, dontony.com. Listen, we want to improve those rankings. I can't thank you enough for your support. And I love doing video. But when you look at these Apple charts and Spotify and Chartable, they don't factor in video. They don't factor in Patreon. They don't factor in other outlets. So if you love what I do and you want to support the shows and you want to do it in a way where you financially don't have to spend anything, go to dontony.com, download the audio episodes. It helps more than you can imagine. And I don't ever want to think about getting rid of video, but obviously that hurts my overall numbers, and you definitely could support the shows in a very big way by just downloading the shows every week. Now, as far as today's show, normally on Wednesdays, we do what a lot of other people do out there. We spend a good portion of it recapping and reviewing what went down on NXT, what went down on AEW Dynamite. This week's going to be a little different, though. I always welcome your opinions, ideas, criticisms, praise. Love the praise. And whether you email it, DM me, post it on a YouTube comment section, I read everything. And a couple of weeks ago, John from Nebraska posted something on YouTube that had me thinking, like, yeah, this actually would be a good, interesting discussion to have on a special Wednesday episode. And I thought tonight is the perfect night to do it. Later on in the show, I will give you my quick thoughts on the situation with LeFisto and the AEW women's roster, everything that went down last week. A lot of you have been asking my opinion about that, and I'm going to take a stance that I don't think anybody out there has taken. So if you're interested in how I feel about that situation, tune in a little bit later. At the very end of the show, we're going to talk about NXT's rating, which just came in. I'm doing this at 4:15 in the afternoon. The rating came in minutes ago. And I got an alert that, you know, the rating came in. And we'll break it down, but they almost hit 800,000 for the night. Not for Dominic's match, for the night. So they are clicking on all cylinders right now. Collision this week, you got to write it off. It went head-to-head with SummerSlam, so you knew there was going to be a lot of people that were not going to watch Collision live, and the numbers reflected. But there is a part of the ratings that is a trend, something that we've brought up now 3 of the last 4 weeks, and we're going to address it because no one else out there is. And I guess I can preface what we're going to get into. I'll say it like this. You know, one of my biggest pet peeves about the loud noise. You know, the bigger shows out there, the ones that have much larger audience that are very, very supportive of AEW, if you notice the pattern, they either gush, everything's epic, amazing, unbelievable, the greatest of all time, or they make excuses. Well, this and this, this. Last week, I literally laughed when now they're doing demos of people that walked out during AEW. A lot of people left during the Shida-Tony Storm match. And I actually watched journalists, legit journalists, say, well, it was mostly families and kids because kids had school the next day. And I'm like, you're actually now doing demographics of who leaves shows? That is a perfect example of what I've been saying. They either gush or they make excuses. Since 1997, I've been doing this. And since 1997, I am never content with the shows I put out. I always feel I could do something better. Kev Castle has been doing it since 2005. And he is never satisfied with what he puts out. He always feels that there's room to do a little bit better. As far as the wrestling that we see, Collision gets 700,000. Great. Should be more. Not enough. Needs to be more. Get 600,000. You read online, oh, Warner Media said 600,000 is beautiful and anything above it is gravy. Remember the comment Dave Meltzer said months ago that 35,000 for All In would be a huge success. I literally went an hour later on my show and said, fuck no. You do not want a gun for 35,000. You gun for 90,000. You don't set the bar. And the reason why people do that, obviously, is that if you set the bar low, you know that the number's going to be better. It gives you the false impression that people are overperforming. And there's the content or make excuses. You don't see any of those people out there ever putting out there, you know what? This is good, but it should be better. This is great, but you could do this, this, and this to make it even better. Because most of them don't have those ideas. Or they don't want to criticize. They think they'll hurt somebody's feelings or anger someone. I think by now, for yours truly and for Kev, you know, we don't give a shit who we upset. And you know what? At the end of the day, a lot of the people within the business will contact us. You know, not everybody, but will say, keep doing what you're doing, man. Keep telling it like it is. You know, straight up, honest. You know, maybe not everything you say that everybody likes, but at the end of the day, you're being truthfully honest and you're trying to express opinions. And I will continue doing that. So I love your opinions. I love your ideas, your praise. I love your praise. And I love your criticism and suggestions. A couple of weeks ago, John from Nebraska posted a comment on YouTube on one of the episodes and said, hey, DT, I got an idea for you on a future Wednesday show. If AEW hired you right now and you could change one thing in that company right now, what would it be? And if NXT hired you right now and you could change one thing right now in NXT, what would it be? Now, I ask all of you that. And I would love for all of you, you know, to send some feedback any way you want. But it's not an easy answer to come up with. I mean, you could think of an individual person and say, you know what? Miro has been on Collision now for 2 months. He's had 3 matches. He's beaten Nick Comorato, Tony Nese, and what, Anthony Henry? Let's be honest. They are doing shit with Miro. And you know what will happen? In a month, Miro will lay out CM Punk. Oh, he's getting a push. They did that with Hobbs multiple times. Finally, they're giving him a push. What has Hobbs done since he lost to Ricky Starks in the Owen Hart tournament? He's got a couple of Ring of Honor matches. You know, it gives the perception that, oh, no, he's still a big part of the company, but Ring of Honor is not on Warner Media. It's not advertising revenue. It's not the TV deal. It's Tony Khan's baby. You know, that's the excuse. You know, I remember when we were talking about Athena, and I was talking about, wow, you know, they don't put Athena ever on Dynamite or Rampage. And had some people, oh, John Ring of Honor every week. Yeah, that has nothing to do with Warner Media and a TV deal or anything. And suddenly, all of a sudden, she's on TV and she's in the Owen Hart tournament and she's featured on TV. And then she ends up being part of the lowest ratings of AEW. Last week, Toni Storm and Sheeta was the lowest rating of AEW. I will tell you right now, when we get into Collision later on, Chris Statlander's match on Collision was tied for the lowest on AEW. And there's a reason behind it, and it's not the women's fault. When I get into LeFisto and the women's roster a little bit later, it'll tie in with what I just said. But this show, it's going to be formatted like this. In a moment, I'm going to tell you that one thing that I would change in AEW right now if I could. And it's something behind the scenes. And it has nothing to do with CM Punk and the Elite and what happened last year. I will then tell you what I would change right now with NXT. And it's something you would see on TV every week. Then after that, I'll talk Lefisto. We'll get into some ratings, give you some quick results, and we'll get out of here. So I'll open up the answer about AEW in this way. For everybody who's tuning in right now that's working, whether you're a mechanic, whether you work in an office, whether you work in a bank, a gas station, a Target, you know, there is always, you're expendable. You can be replaced. At some point, if your performance is not at its peak, and there's someone out there hungrier than you, someone who is more dedicated than you, someone who will put in the extra work, and that employer realizes that they get more productivity over this person than you, 9 times out of 10, you will be replaced. And when you look at NXT, now, yeah, when Triple H had the interview with Stephen A. Smith, he mentioned this. And the people out there that, you know, refuse to admit and accept the fact that Triple H has been part of the Vince McMahon regime for 3 decades. They think for some reason Triple H thinks completely different than everybody else. But when Triple H makes a comment of what I'm about to say, people, oh, that's Vince telling him to say that. What did Triple H say to Ariel Helwani? What did he say to Stephen A. Smith? He has said this at least 3 or 4 times in the last bunch of years, that especially for NXT, 6 months, a year, whatever it is, if you are not growing, if you're not performing, if you are not improving, you will be cut. Everybody could be replaced. Now, obviously, if you got somebody that is extremely special, yeah, they'll get a little bit of extra leeway. I mean, that's just common sense. But in NXT, you look at the Tiffany Strattons, even a year ago of what we said about Stax and how he was on thin ice. And you look at some others over the last 12 months. You look at Lola Vice right now and you look, you know, one thing that definitely comes through the TV is that people are hungry. Dana Brooke, back in NXT, demotion? Yeah, I think we all agree on that. But you could see that she is trying, and trying may not be good enough after 8 years. But I think she finally sees the writing on the wall, like, if I don't take this situation and turn it into the, take this chicken, I don't consider NXT chicken shit, but if you're going to take from what she was doing before and now in NXT is chicken shit, she's got to turn it into the most amazing tasting chicken salad or she's gone. Baron Corbin, they put him with JBL. They made him happy. They made him mad. They made him a winner. They made him a loser. They made him a winner again. They made him an asshole. Now they made him the lone wolf. And you could feel this guy is hungry. Being in NXT is not enough. And if he doesn't turn it around, he might be gone. His match with Carmelo Hayes was solid. I'm not a Baron Corbin fan. And even I was saying that night, you know what? The way the match was played out, Corbin should have won. Of course, you're not taking the title off of Carmelo Hayes right now, but Corbin showed everyone this motherfucker's hungry. That is something that you see, even on the main roster. You know, I know a lot of people are critical about Hit Row right now. I have been critical as well, and some others, the Viking Raiders and others. But, you know, when you see their reaction on social media, they're very defensive because they don't want to start that trend where it becomes the popular thing to just, you know, you trend it on social media to fire these people. And then if management feels like there's no way to recoup, look at Lacey Evans' situation. She did that to herself, let's be honest. But how do you repair that? I mean, really, how do you repair that? I mean, I've given my ideas in the past on how you could possibly improve Lacey Evans. You know, I would have her team up with Dana Brooke, even if it's in NXT, and just let her, you know, let her be two blonde bitches assholes, just heels Fuck the military stuff. Fuck it. Just really, I think they actually could help each other, because individually, I don't think they could bring it like the others. They're not going to leapfrog a hell of a lot of women on that roster. But what does this have to do with AEW? When the pandemic hit, WWE released like 100 wrestlers. And if you remember when this was happening, you know, we're in a obviously different world compared to 10, 20 years ago. And the most popular trending viewpoint was, how could you fire anybody during a pandemic? They have families. They have this. And yeah, that might be, you know, on a different planet, or it's a nice fuzzy feeling, you know, moment. Oh, yeah, that's fucked up. How could you fire people? But welcome to the world of business. And yes, WWE is a publicly traded company. WWE's value is billions more than what it was a couple of years ago. You imagine, put everything aside about Vince, put everything aside about anybody you don't like in WWE right now, and just ask yourself this question. If you were looking for people to invest in your company, billion-dollar company, and the investors see that during a pandemic, you have streamlined your company because you realize you're not touring, you're not doing house shows, you're not going to pay-per-views, premium live events, you're just performing in Florida in front of TV screens, video screens. You don't need 150 wrestlers. You might get away with 50. And your investors see that under a crisis, you are taking steps to prevent your company from just plummeting financially. And the stock market reacted in a positive way. And yeah, it might not be popular, but that's why people invest in what you do. You know, even fans in a wrestling company, and you buy a shirt, when you do this, you download, it's an episode, you subscribe to a Patreon, you become a YouTube channel member, you super chat someone, you're investing, you appreciate, you enjoy, you're supporting whoever you're putting that money in their pocket. So when WWE releases a boatload of people, you know, there was a lot of, you know, dissatisfaction online. Of course, nobody wants to be fired, especially under a crisis. Man, I'm about to have a kid. I just got laid off of my job. Man, I'm about to get married and I got fired. It happens in all lines of business. And whatever job that you work right now, there is always somebody who can replace you. There is always somebody who might be hungrier than you. And if your employer feels that you're not working to your expectations and they feel that they're giving you too much money and that money could be better used by someone else, or there's someone out there hungrier, you will be replaced. And when it comes to AEW, when Vince was the most hated for releasing all these people, Tony Khan, this is not a shit on Tony Khan campaign, but this is what I would change immediately. Tony Khan went on social media and made a statement that, unlike others, he's not firing anyone. He will let people's contracts run out, but he's not firing anyone. Now, obviously, if somebody commits a crime, we've had a couple of incidences, we're not going to bring up any names, but if somebody, you know, commits like domestic abuse, or, you know, yeah, they'll be cut sooner. Something is revealed, you know, that they didn't know before. Yeah, somebody will be cut sooner. But Tony Khan made it clear that he will not fire anyone. He'll let their contracts run out and they won't be rehired. And that, to me, is the biggest mistake that Tony Khan is doing right now. And the reason why I say that is, you look at all of those Dark and Elevation episodes, and you look at people who have 50, 60, 70 wins on those episodes. You look at people who have been wrestling there for 2, 3, 4 years. I'm not going to name any names and hurt anybody's feelings, but I actually watched somebody who was on the AEW women's roster right now, who's been there for multiple years, that I support. And few people online last week with LeFisto sub said, wow, fire so-and-so, she sucks. And she went online, she's like, look, I'm trying to get better. I'm doing the best I can. And, you know, I felt bad for her. You know, but the thing is that for every person like her who is trying and is really, really, you know, you don't think that people who play in the NBA or trying to get to the major leagues, you don't think that they try? You could sit in the batting cage for 8 hours a day and still strike out almost all the time. Just because you keep doing something doesn't mean that you're going to be better at it. If that was the case, everybody would score 30 points a game in basketball. You see people who end up, you know, they can't make it. They try, they work harder than anybody else, and they still can't make it. We're not robots. Just because you try doesn't mean that you're going to get good at it. But in AEW, one of their biggest problems is the fact that there's a comfort zone. From the lowest on the card all the way up, there is a comfort zone. Hey, I got a 3-year contract, so I could coast. They're not going to put a belt on me. They're not going to push me. If they're going to give me a little spurts here and there, you know, I'll do, you know, what I got to do, and I'm guaranteed to get paid. And that comfort allows people to not have that hunger feeling inside. That feeling like, man, if I don't fucking deliver, I'm going to be replaced. Somebody's off TV for 2, 3, 4, 5 months. And sure, the reasons for Miro and others is different. But for other wrestlers who stunk up the joint, but had a 3-year deal, yeah, some of them ended up just not having their contracts renewed. And what did you hear multiple times? Tony Khan never even contacted me. I reached out to Tony Khan. I didn't even know my contract wasn't being renewed, and Tony never got back to me. I truthfully believe that one of Tony Khan's biggest problems is, you know, not everybody is comfortable with going up to somebody's face and saying, listen, you're not doing a good job. I got to let you go. You know, there's people are afraid of it. Listen, in my line of insurance, for many, many years, I was intimidated to tell someone, look, I can't renew your insurance, or I can't write you, or, and, you know, this negative stuff comes up, and I didn't want to deal with confrontation. I didn't want to deal with somebody yelling in my face. I didn't want to deal with somebody, you know, I felt bad. You know, you have your Johnny Aces and you have others who have no problem. Yeah, I'll fire the person. Who do you want me to fire? I have no problem. I'll tell them right to their face. I think Tony Khan, you know, by putting that comment out during the pandemic, thought that, you know, maybe people will tune in because it's a nicer company. It's a more, you know, caring boss. And yeah, that's great for the wrestlers, you know, but it also eliminates that hunger. That, man, you look at Bodie Hayward, which I hope WWE brings him back soon. I haven't heard shit from him recently. I know he's doing some stuff, but you look at even Parker Boudreau, which they made him hauling, and I thought, man, this guy's got something, and it ended up they felt this guy, I guess, just didn't, you know, get better, and they gave him a lot of opportunity. And listen, I know he would differ, and, you know, it's not on TV anymore, even in AEW, but the point is that you look at that NXT roster up and down, and you listen to those multiple times that Triple H said, look, if people don't show, you know, take it to the next level or develop 6 months, you know, they're gone. Or a year, it's not exact time frame, but when you have that comfort that, hey, let me just get in the door for AEW, you know, and it's a vacation for a couple of years. And if I'm not being used, if I'm being put on Elevation and I get a dark match and, you know, I'm not on TV for a month, but hey, the checks still keep coming in. You know, that's the biggest problem for me right now with AEW. By not releasing people who who are not performing or developing or improving, you know, that just creates, you know, a comfort zone. That doesn't give an incentive for somebody out there, you know, to, it doesn't give that pressure that, man, if I don't step it up, I could get fired tomorrow. You know, I know it's messed up that someone goes to sleep at night wondering if they're going to be canned the next day. And believe me, there's some people in the WWE roster, they go to sleep at night and they are afraid that tomorrow they may get that phone call and they're out of a job. You know, and it sucks if somebody gets fired. Even it's even people that we like. But for some people, you see their bodies transforming. You see their in-ring work improving. That's because of that fear and that hunger that if I don't step up, if I don't fix something, if I don't take care of this, I'm going to get dropped. And there's someone else out there drooling, waiting for their opportunity. And that is something you do not feel or see in AEW. You look at their shows every week. You know, you have your core participants. And then you get some other individuals that'll get, you know, a couple of weeks of TV time and then they disappear for a month or two. Then someone else will get a little bit of TV. But it doesn't, there's no sense of improvement. Do you feel like some of those individuals the last couple of years have really gone to the next level? You look at Hobbs, you look at Wardlow, you even look at Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks is getting more attention on Collision. I still don't believe he will become world champion in AEW over the next 12 months. It was 16 months ago, right around my birthday, we had the conversation about Powerhouse Hobbs when people felt, including me, like they're finally giving him a push. And the push that we thought he was going to get in 2020. And we were talking last year in 2022. And I said, let's see a year from now. Let's see what he's doing a year from now. Remember when Starks was feuding with MJF? And I said, let's see 3 months from now where he is on a food chain. He, you know, he had an opportunity feuding with the Jericho Appreciation Society. Does it feel like he has become to the next level, that he is a danger to be, you know, for MJF's championship? No. No. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors. You look at people from a year ago to now, and a lot of people have not been brought to the next level. There's little drips and drabs where you feel that perception that they are, but it's not. And Tony Khan, if I could change one thing right now, you got to just lay it down to the employees. Listen, you know, pandemic, it was a different situation, but, you know, if people are not stepping up, that are not improving, you know, you will be let go. It's not popular. People will dislike Tony Khan for making a comment like that, but that is absolutely necessary to make people feel that they sign a contract. At minimum, they get to stay for whatever time that is. That is just wrong. It is not a PC thing, obviously, but that is the big difference. That's why you look at the NXT roster, you look at the women's roster, and then you look on the opposite side. Does it feel like there's any growth in any big way? No, absolutely not. Now, on the NXT side, if I could change one thing right now, I'll tell you what that is. Now, keep in mind, when I say what I'm about to say, understand, let me remind you that NXT is WWE's developmental. It's just like OVW. It's just like what Heartland was, you know, to an extent. Florida Championship Wrestling. Only difference is we get to see it on TV week in and week out, and we get members of the main roster that interact at times with the developmental roster. Sometimes you send somebody down who might be a veteran, who maybe need a little bit of, you know, repurposing. You know, if you remember back in ECW, you know, they sent Al Snow to ECW. And look what Al Snow did. He went from being a rocker to having head and transforming his look, transforming his career. I still remember the day when he lost to Shane Douglas and then he showed up on Raw and the gate from the parking lot or the building would lift it up, and when people saw it was Al Snow, they popped big time. He totally turned his career around. That's hunger. That's drive. That's if I don't fucking turn my shit around, I get dropped. Then what do I do? So that's what I would have done with AEW. Now, again, with NXT, keep in mind this is the minor leagues. This is their developmental. So when I say what I'm about to say, you know, just keep it in that perspective. If I was NXT right now and I could change one thing, I would create a secondary title for the women's division. Right now, on NXT, you have four championships on the men's side. And believe me when I tell you, I'm not going to go through the roster. But if you look at the men's roster and the women's roster, there's not that much of a difference. You might have an extra 10 guys, 12 guys on the NXT roster on the men's side. But, you know, we got some that were just brought in to the main roster, you know, for NXT, who weren't on TV a couple of weeks ago. You got a couple of others. Yeah, I don't want to start hurting anybody's feelings, but you got your Dante Chens, and you got your Guru Rajas, and you got your Hank Walkers. Or, you know, you just know that at this point, you know, they're just there trying to take it to the next level within NXT. Not everybody on the men's side is at the top of their division. So even though the men's side of NXT is a little bit bigger than the women's side, you have four championships on the men's side. The North American Championship, the World Championship, and the Tag Team Championships. On the women's side, you got one title, and it's Tiffany Stratton. And, you know, I had somebody on Patreon who got a little bit upset last night when I said what I said about Tiffany Stratton. And I think he totally misunderstood my point. For the last year, I've been singing the praise big time for Tiffany Stratton. I thought last year, at minimum, she should have won Most Improved Women's Wrestler of 2022. You look at her 1 year ago to now, and that woman, she is hungry. She wants it. She's going for it. And she got it. She's the women's champion NXT right now. But just because she improved significantly over the last 12 months means that she is the cornerstone for the NXT women's division. She's definitely improved. She's a future main roster star. Absolutely. But when you look at the Blair Davenports and, you know, some of the other wrestlers, Lyra Valkyria, you even look at Roxanne Perez, you know, there are other women in NXT that suspension of disbelief, you know, as far as ability, you know, as far as, you know, what they do, that they could put rings around Tiffany Stratton still. That is not a knock on Tiffany Stratton. You improve over a year. You know, understand, I think people still don't realize how few matches Tiffany Stratton has under her belt. We were talking the last week about Trick Williams. Trick Williams obviously is going to be a huge star unless he fucks up or gets seriously injured. That guy doesn't even have 100 matches under his belt. Tony D'Angelo, I don't think that guy's got 100 matches in his career. So you see progression of people who weren't even wrestling before they went to NXT. But on the women's side, you took away the tag team championships. And honestly, I agree with it. I agree with it. It cannot be Toxic Attraction and everybody else. I still believe they made a big mistake breaking up Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. And I do believe one day they will reform a tag team if they both remain in WWE. We'll talk about that another night. But you look at the overall women's division, I mean, there really isn't any strong women's tag teams that are developed enough where they can legitimately be viewed as champions and then defend against others. You know, you see Valentina Feroz and what's her tag team partner? Oh, shit. Yulisa Leon. They're growing and they're developing, but they're not on the level of being a tag team champion as of yet. So you look at the women's division in NXT, you don't have enough women's tag teams to keep those belts. I get that. But you can't just have one individual championship and then everybody else is on the sidelines. Tiffany Stratton's been a champion now for 70 some odd days. And so far, she's feuded with Thea Hale. I know she's had a couple of house shows, but for the most part, she's feuded with Thea Hale. Thea Hale's 19 years old. She is one of those that didn't wrestle, you know, is brand new. And she's got a nice career ahead of her. I'm a big fan of Thea Hale. But after all of this, for Tiffany Stratton over the last 12 months, her first almost 3 months as champion, and Thea Hale is how you started off. I mean, I have nothing against Thea Hale, but we all knew there was no chance of her winning at this point. This would have been worse than Mikey Whipwreck in 1999. That's nothing against Mikey Whipwreck, but it was a hard sell to have him as ECW world champion in 95. I still remember the signs that, oh, he must wash Todd's car, or even worse. But the women in NXT, I know for some of you out there, titles don't matter. Titles are just trinkets. But it is, it gives you exposure. It gives acknowledgement that you're doing something right, and you're doing it right to the point where WWE wants to give you that little bit of extra, you know, value, extra exposure. And right now, Tiffany Stratton has that championship, and all the other women that are on that roster, you know, I'm sure they all want to become world champion. But right now, there's no secondary title for them to gun for. So what do you do instead? Oh, well, you take your Blair Davenport, who obviously, you know, nobody would have an issue if she was women's champion right now. You have a few with Roxanne Perez. So that keeps the focus off of the women's championship for those two women because they're busy brawling with each other. You look at Kiana James and you look at Gigi Dolin recently, or even before that, Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. Nobody talks about them possibly going for the women's championship because they're busy feuding with each other. So you have these feuds going on, and now you got Ivy Nile, and they're doing something with the schism because she doesn't have the Creed brothers with her right now, but I think that will change in the storyline. You look at some of the others, and there's no secondary championship to have them stand out a little bit more. Right now, how it seems like how some of the women get rewarded, since there's no secondary title, they'll get a match on Main Event. They may get a dark match before a Raw or a SmackDown. Or they may get an opportunity that maybe somebody from the main roster stops by NXT and they have a match. Lyra Valkyria. I had no interest in Lyra up until about maybe a month ago. Now suddenly, I feel she is leapfrogging everybody on the NXT roster. And unless she dethrones Tiffany Stratton, there is no championship for her to gun for. I think for the women, there has to be a secondary title for them to aim for. To aim for. You could keep tag teams. We do have a few tag teams in NXT. But these women, especially if they feel, oh, WWE has the Jets behind Tiffany Stratton, they're not taking that belt off her anytime soon, no matter who is, you know, really at the top of their game. That kind of sucks. That kind of sucks. And you have some women injured. Sol Ruker is injured. Nikita Lyons is injured. Wendy Chu is injured. Amari Miller, Ariana Grace, Santino Marella's daughter. You know, some of them, I think Nikita Lyons, everybody believes that she is destined to become NXT Women's Champion. She's going to be back soon, I would think. And if she ends up becoming Women's World Champion, then she has the stranglehold and all the other women, you know, they feel that there's no say. I think they need a secondary title. I mean, I don't know what you call it. I don't get paid. You know, I'm not on that pay grade to come up with a secondary championship, but they need to come up with one. Even if it's a TV title or something, I think they really need to come up with a secondary championship for the women. Give, you know, and I know there's always that risk that the secondary champion may outshine the main champion. You know, for some people out there, there's people out there that dig Gunther and his Intercontinental Championship reign more than they dig Seth Rollins' reign. And that's fine. In the world of pro wrestling, as fans, we have our rights, you know, to cheer and really enjoy and get into whoever we want to get into. I personally feel, you know, whether you think championships are trinkets, and they're really not worth anything, however you view it, I think for the women, it's just, you know, it's an acknowledgement. It's something that shows that this person has achieved. This person is, you know, grown and is on a level that they're being rewarded. Mandy Rose, could you imagine if Mandy Rose had the exact same career in NXT and she wasn't a champion during that time? Everybody, you know, would be saying, wow, how could you not put the belt on her? What the hell are you waiting for? This isn't that. You know, it's interesting, even those who don't think titles matter, but yet, you know, you hear the same people, oh, LA Knight should be United States champion right now. Oh, this person should be champion. Oh, put the belt on Jey Uso. Put the belt on this person. You know, but what, you know, so I think the women need to have a secondary prize to go for. It's an achievement. It's an accomplishment. To just be listed on the roster, that's what I would change. There's a lot more that you could change in AEW and NXT. But if I was hired in either company right now, those are the two things I would change. I would change the policy that anybody could be released at any time if they're not performing on or improving, or, you know, they could be replaced. I would just tell the roster, look, anybody on this roster can be replaced. There are a lot of people out there who are very, very hungry. And if you get an opportunity, and after a reasonable amount of time, if you don't deliver, then unfortunately you will be replaced. You watch how suddenly it lights a fire. Look at Britt Baker. I'm not putting this on Britt Baker, but I hear more and more and more and more and more, and no one's going to deny this. More people out there saying, wow, what the fuck happened to her? Like, she is worse now than she was a year ago. What happened? And then you also hear that she's cut time from her dentist practices and she's focusing more on wrestling. And you say to yourself, you're like, what happened to her? And, you know, maybe that feeling that, oh, she's got a job and she has no worries and she feels that she's, you know, in a position that her job was not in jeopardy, and maybe you kind of get a little bit relaxed. Listen, just because you're a fan of someone, and I like her work, I like her, I think she overall she's improved, but when I hear more and more people pointing this out and I look with my eyes are not deceiving, and just because the crowd chants, believe me, I used to watch wrestling from ECW and beyond. I mean, I haven't been a fan since 79, but I've seen wrestlers who were extremely popular and they were not very good in the ring. I'm not saying that Britt Baker is not good in the ring, but your eyes are not deceiving you, and you wonder that if, you know, if she or someone else feels, you know what, I could be replaced if I don't straighten my shit out. I think there's too much of a comfort zone there. So, all right, let's move on. LeFisto. All right. By now, a lot of you know what happened with LeFisto. I'm not going to read the transcript from an interview with Fightful, but she's had some issues. She thought she was going to become a coach. Dustin Rhodes had some, you know, critical words for her. And, you know, apparently she had some issues with Ruby Soho, this and that. But the gist and the meat and potatoes of this is Fisto is in her 40s. Her in-ring pro wrestling career as an indie wrestler is coming to a close. In fact, it may have been now, you know, sped up her career as a wrestler. She is off the upcoming Beyond Wrestling show. And a lot of people feel that she was pulled from there because, or she may have pulled herself off. She removed her Twitter account. She took it offline. That would be the better way to put it. The AEW women's roster, MJF, and a lot of the IWC really went balls hard on LaFisto. Because after we watched a rather subpar match with Taya Valkyrie and Britt Baker, we talked about it. There was a sign in the crowd that was shown on the TV where it said, book the women's division better. Okay? Got to take a sip of my drink. So, after we saw that sign, it trended on Twitter. And this kind of reminded me of Give Divas a Chance. Not the original movement from years ago, but even recently. You know, give so-and-so a chance, give Divas a chance, you know, push the women's division. You know, people feel still that it should be 50-50, which is obviously up for debate on another night. But when that sign was shown on TV and it started trending on Twitter as a topic of discussion and people were running with it, LaFisto posted a tweet and said this, and I quote, "It's cute how people blame booking for a bad women's division. Talent with too much power, talent denigrating each other, talent trash-talking potential employees so they never get in as soon as they walk in. It starts here. The one you called the fucking French-Canadian asshole." Now, that comment, I guess, was directed to Dustin Rhodes, and as far as trash-talking potential employees, LaFisto was talking about herself. But when LaFisto was talking about talent with too much power, talent denigrating each other, obviously this stems to a little bit of the Thunder Rosa situation. You might remember, without naming names, you might remember that there was a couple of women who were tied to Thunder Rosa that suddenly, you know, the alleged claim was that they weren't getting a match. They were taken off the cards entirely. And I don't remember who it was, but somebody within AEW, might have been Lee Johnson, confronted the people online that were making that claim. But we know the controversy with Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker from the past. You know, we know what's been alleged. We watched that TV series, that reality series that AEW was doing. You had an idea with Britt Baker and stuff like that. So there's obviously some truth to some of it. But as far as the women's division goes, I think LaFisto got it wrong. And I think a lot of others have gotten it wrong as well. And I'll tell you why. I will say this also, which is very interesting. When I watched all this playing out on social media last week, the backlash, the responses from a lot of AEW women, the response by MJF, which I'll read for you in a second. What I also noticed is that, like, guys in the wrestling social media world, not wrestlers, like guys, fans, they seem to be 50 times angrier at LaFisto than the women wrestlers themselves. It's just a weird dynamic that was going on. But after LaFisto wrote that, she did an interview with Fightful. And she elaborated a little bit more as far as what went on and, you know, Dustin Rhodes with some comments and, you know, some people that, you know, she wasn't getting along with over there. And, you know, she was supposed to, I guess, get a shot at becoming a trainer and it didn't happen. And, you know, she reached out to Tony Khan and Tony Khan never talked to her. You know, it's there's a lot to unwrap over there. And she's trying to explain why she said what she said and what happened to her. Okay, that's fine. But the thing is this. After she wrote what she wrote on social media, a lot of women in AEW started going after her. And going after her hard. I know Dutch Mantel made the claim that this was a coordinated hit job orchestrated by Tony Khan. I don't believe that. But Taya Valkyrie, Renee Paquette, Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, Saraya, Madison Rain, they all posted responses. MJF posted a response, and I'll share some of the responses for you. And they're not long because, Twitter's still only 320 characters. So when LeFisto was talking about her issues with Ruby Soho specifically, because they do have a little bit of a history, they don't get along. Saraya wrote that Ruby is an angel who is adored by everyone, and some WWE women even stepped up for Ruby Soho as well. Now, me, personally, I don't know her, but some people who do know her that I'm friendly with have always said nothing but good things about Ruby Soho. So based on what I have been told, I can't criticize Ruby Soho here. Renee Paquette says, "We have an incredible women's division that all look out for each other and support each other." Guys, I want you to remember that comment when I get into my take on this. Renee continues to say, "I've never seen it anything other than a safe space for a bunch of kick-ass women that all want to see each other and see all of AEW shine in their full potential." Women hating women is a real dusty take. That's not Dusty Rhodes, everyone. All right, Britt Baker. Britt Baker accused about, shooting on Thunder Rosa, this and that, because that was a claim that LeFisto made. Britt Baker says that that's not true. She said that Thunder Rosa called a meeting to discuss multiple personal issues. There was no meeting to shoot on Thunder Rosa. These are salacious Twitter rumors. And, I didn't see much written by Thunder Rosa. And I don't blame her because Twitter could be toxic. And I think Thunder Rosa, her stance is that, I'm not going to take a side on this because it's one way or the other, it's going to just drag her back into the mud. And Thunder Rosa is not only recovering, for her back, but she's also recovering mentally as well. Believe me, that is a very big situation. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you know the deep, dark story behind that. Madison Rain says, "Every Wednesday I leave my daughter and my husband and get on a plane. Every Wednesday I fly somewhere hundreds of miles away from my father who is battling stage 4 cancer. And every Wednesday I walk into a locker room of women who motivate, uplift, and generally enjoy one another." So far, guys, I have no issue with what anybody's saying here, but there's a bigger problem. Let me continue. Saraya also adds, "The narrative going around is very disheartening, considering someone that says they want the best for the women's wrestling, but buries it in a number of tweets. I will say that being in this company close to a year, my favorite part is being with the girls in the locker room." Taya Valkyrie, "This narrative that all of the AEW women hate each other is quite frankly annoying. I've been here for 5 months, and everyone from the second I walk into that building has been nothing but supportive, hyping each other, and badass. Stop pinning women against each other. It's getting old." Then I'll finish up with MJF's tweet about this. MJF, and this was interesting because a lot of people felt that MJF, being a world champion, being a guy, should stay out of this. Whatever side you feel about that, that's your prerogative. I'm just reading what he said. His response was, "If you listen to miserable people who never made it in this sport, that's not exactly the brightest thing to do. Use your brain. If someone's been in pro wrestling for over a decade and you find them to be talented, but they've never truly panned out, there's a reason for it. Lack of talent, difficulty to work with, delusional, just to name a few. People love to talk ill of companies and will say things like, quote, 'I'm the only person who's brave enough to speak up,' when in reality, the only reason you're spewing bullshit is because you are aware deep down you aren't going to make it. So what's the harm in spewing reckless lies and trying to hurt hard working talented people on your way down to obscurity. We have an amazing women's locker room. Sorry, not sorry. Okay. Here's my take on this. And I'm on the outside looking in. I'm expressing an opinion. I want to just preface it with that. But do you notice a pattern with every comment that was written from MJF to Sray and everyone else? They talk about the women's locker room. And they talk about how the women support each other. I 1,000% believe that. I believe that the women within AEW are all rooting for each other. Sure, deep down inside, there's always that competitive nature that, hey, I want to be out there. I think if I get that opportunity, that I could show AEW that I'm worthy of getting TV time. I'm worthy of being on Collision. I'm worthy of being on Dynamite. I'm worthy of a title shot. So I don't disagree, and I don't contest what any of these women said. But there is obviously a bigger problem here. Women supporting each other in the locker room is beautiful, and that's good. The bigger problem is the owner of the company does not view women's wrestling as if a strong enough product to get more than a match, two at the most, a little TV time, a promo. And that is just a fact. Tony Khan grew up a huge fan of Ring of Honor, a huge fan of New Japan, a huge fan of ECW. What do they all have in common? I mean, yes, it's a different era. Guys, ECW is my favorite promotion of all time. But that was the 90s to 2001. It was a different era. Women's wrestling, you had your Medusas, your Molly Hollies, Trish, and others who really took their wrestling skills seriously. But as far as the overall scope of what pro wrestling was in the 90s, in the 2000s, even the early 2010s, women's wrestling was not as strong. It was not featured as much. So when you're a female wrestler trying to get into wrestling and you see TNA, TNA deserves so much more credit than they get because they really took, to me, what TNA did for the women's division back in the earlier days, to me is almost, I compare it to WCW showing the Luchadors. When yes, I saw the Luchadors on AAA, I saw it with ECW for a little while, but when WCW started featuring the Luchadors, it opened up a new part of wrestling in the United States that we weren't normally seeing. And when you see them getting that opportunity, yeah, they're not getting the opportunity of a Hall and Nash and others at the time, but still they're getting opportunity. Well, now it inspires others who are into Lucha Libre. Like, hey, maybe I can get a spot in WWE. Maybe I can get a job here. And with women's wrestling, you know, anybody that went to the indies like I did and others, you know, if any of you out there, think back to the indie circuit in the 90s, the indie circuit in the 2000s. You go to a show, you might get one women's match on the card. I saw Alexis Lurie, Mickey James's last women's match before she went to Impact. It was she took on Danny D'Amato in New Jersey. I was there. And it was very rare to get a lot of women's wrestling on a show. I used to watch Mercedes Martinez 20 years ago when she wrestled with Jimmy Hustler and the Masked Maniac and other places. But it was rare. You'd get one match at most. So when you watch WWE, you watch WCW, you watch ECW at that time, you watch others, and there's not much women's wrestling being featured, yeah, if I'm a woman, you know, I might not be inclined to try to make wrestling as a career you know, because I'm, you know, I may not get a shot unless I, you know, aesthetically look like a model or at that time. There was exceptions to the rule. But my point is, you know, AEW has been around now for 4 years. For 4 years. And the women's division on TV, you could see it clear cut that Tony Khan does not put as much effort in the women's division that should be. So this is two totally different situations going on. The women in AEW support each other and rooting for each other because they want more opportunity. They want to be on TV more. But they can't in droves speak out and complain. You're not going to publicly ostracize your boss or criticize him and say, yeah, the women deserve more TV time, more matches, more this, more this, more that. They can't. I wouldn't do that. You know, when I had this spat with Bully Ray 10 years ago, you know, a lot of you remember that. You know, when Tito Ortiz debuted and there was no reaction, this and that, and, you know, I was complaining about a lot of stuff about TNA at the time. And yes, I look back on it, I'm embarrassed. I am embarrassed with a lot of the stuff that I said because I went way over the top. But when I used to argue with him, I used to say, you're not going to admit publicly that this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. You know, you're not going to criticize your boss. I would never expect someone who works for their boss to criticize them. You know, it's not the thing to do. So a lot of these women, I'm not defending LaFisto here. I honestly think LaFisto is more angry that she didn't get the trainer's job than anything else, and she's very, very bitter, and she thinks that people within AEW were instrumental in her not getting that job. I think that's what sparked all of this. But I also feel that when she made the remark that, you know, that the women, giving the women a chance, you know, it's booking, you know, it's cute how people blame booking for a bad women's division, and she says talent with too much power denigrating each other. You know, she misses the boat with that because it is a booker not booking the women's division strong. And I'll give you a perfect example. Anybody that tunes in to my shows on a weekly basis will get annoyed when I say this. But every time I say it, I look at the live comments. 99% of everybody responding agree. Chris Statlander, right now, Chris Statlander is, you know, the TBS champion. And her run so far is identical to Jade Cargill's run. No, I'm not saying they wrestle similar. They don't look like each other. They don't wrestle like each other. There's nothing about each other, you know, other than the fact that they're women and they were champions. What I mean by that is what you had, the formula with Jade Cargill was, she wrestles somebody on TV, squash match, maybe somebody a little bit higher in the food chain, beats them. Then the next week, backstage promo, blah, 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 that damn bitch and all this other stuff. And then somebody may come on the rampway and have a stare down with her, and then that leads to a match. She defeats that person. Then the following week, nothing. The week after that, rampage spot. Week after that, promo. Another week after that, somebody comes out, confrontation, leads to a match. That's pretty much what her career was. You look at Chris Statlander. She's now champion for, you know, a little bit of time. And what is the formula with Chris Statlander? Chris Statlander wrestles random person. And then the following week, somebody comes down the rampway, has a stare down, or maybe even worse, attacks her. And then 3 days later, match. She wins the match. And then a week later, promo. And then she wrestles someone. And then someone else will come out, random, confrontation, attack, maybe not attack, just say some words, suddenly match. And then it gets blended into a tag match. And she could lose in a tag match, which could happen on Collision this Saturday. And then next week, maybe no match at all, backstage promo. Then the week after, she wrestles random somebody. Then someone else will come down the rampway, stare down. Honestly, in the early days of AEW, even though some of the matches were less to be desired, I think they had stronger feuds with the women's division. When they have Brandy going at it with Jade Cargill, when you have Britt Baker going out with Big Swole, sure, some of the matches were less to be desired, but it felt more like feuds, not just random person fucks with champion. 3 days later, match. Then after match happens, nothing. And that's the women's division. And it's good to happen with Hikaru Shida. The only difference with Hikaru Shida is we're only a month away from Wembley weekend, pretty much. So if Thunder Rosa comes back with the title in the bag, calling herself Real World Champion, if she could go, that's where I would go with it. But you watch. Hikaru Shida is going to take on Anna Jay. Well, that was the first match they ever had. It's a random match. Shida will retain. Then someone will come. And I'm doing this before Dynamite even airs. So she will retain. Then maybe somebody comes down the rampway, has a little confrontation. Or they don't do nothing and it just happens next week. And then it ends up to another random match, someone confrontation. That's really what the women's division is. I mean, the Outcasts were spray painting people, but really, what did it amount to? I mean, people were complaining online, like, where did this actually go? And I remember Saray and others were kind of liking some of those tweets, like, you know, they deserved a little bit better. I mean, Toni Storm was the champion, so obviously it led to something substantial. They didn't just waste their time out on TV, but it's pretty obvious, guys. It's pretty obvious. You look at the formula of how the women are used on television. It is the same template month after month after month after month. And just because Athena and Willow headline a Ring of Honor pay-per-view, just because a women's match closes out Dynamite, doesn't mean that suddenly Tony Khan went to a church and there was singing and dancing and he had an epiphany and realized, I need to book the women more. I need to have them have showcase of bigger matches. A month from now, we're going to look back and we're going to say, same shit. 4 years have gone by. 4 years. And it's pretty much the same template. So women supporting each other in the locker room in AEW, yeah, I believe that 100%, and that's cool. I also believe deep down inside, I think there is a boatload of women frustrated within AEW that don't get more opportunity on Dynamite. I mean, you can't argue as much about Rampage because Rampage is only 1 hour. But, you know, they're not getting anywhere near. And here's another thing. Even when you look at WWE, and I saw all this, you know, it's the annual tradition, SummerSlam. Two women's matches on the card. You get a couple of thousand people on social media. It's fucked up. Women only have two matches. What the fuck? WWE, give women more opportunity. You look a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. They've been doing this setup. The difference is when you see the buildup to Asuka, Charlotte, Bianca Belair, even Trish and Becky on Raw next week. You know, yeah, they didn't have a SummerSlam match. Oh, well. But the point is, if you look at the matches that a lot of the women are going to have, even Rhea Ripley and Raquel Rodriguez soon, they have feuds that have given time to build. It doesn't feel like they're being thrown out there just to be thrown out there. They maximize the time that they're given. And honestly, that is why the women's matches in AEW consistently share the lowest quarters or the biggest drops week after week after week. That is not a knock on the women's performances. That is not a knock on the women themselves in AEW. It's just the fans are not stupid. If they feel that AEW doesn't put much effort and time in the women's division, they're not going to put as much effort and time in the women's division. They feel, oh, you know what? We know that Chris Statlander is going to beat Mercedes Martinez. We know Jade Cargill is going to beat whoever's in front of her. And it's not going to be even a three-star match. So, yeah, let me go get it, make, go change the channel. See what's going on. What's the score of the baseball game? Let me go make something to eat. You put it, Sheeta versus Toni Storm is the main event last week. And it ended up being the lowest quarter of the night. You knew that it was going to be something special. That's why it closed out the Dynamite. Either Sheeta was going to win the championship or somebody was going to make a surprise appearance. You don't close out Dynamite with the women that you never do unless something out of the ordinary is going to happen. And that still was not intriguing enough for fans to stick around. I don't want to make exaggerated here. It's not like 90% of the fans left. But fans aren't stupid. But people are afraid to bring this up because of the lashback. And people don't want to criticize. And again, the women within AEW are not going to speak out about this. You don't want to upset your employer. You don't want to criticize them. And then you might get even less of an opportunity. So by them all becoming vocal and going after LeFisto and sticking up for each other, that is, you know, a family who is looking out for each other. The problem is, will that suddenly interpret an extra match on Dynamite? Maybe next week you get an extra match. Holy shit, Tony Khan gave an extra match. Let me put it this way. If you get two women's matches on a Dynamite, that would trend on Twitter. That would fucking trend on Twitter. Holy shit, the women got two matches on Dynamite tonight. That shows you on how they're utilized on the main roster. The fact that that would be that big of a deal that it would trend shows you how they're used. So now I give you Collision. AEW Collision this past Saturday did 417,000 viewers. Obviously going up against SummerSlam. We write that number off, obviously. Now, what I found interesting was the high point of Collision was the 9:30 to 9:45 period, the next to last quarter, did 460,000 viewers. But what I find pretty interesting is that for the final 15 minutes of CM Punk versus Ricky Starks with Ricky Steamboat, the rating went down to 442,000 viewers. That's only 18,000 viewers. But still, the fact that as the match went on, 18,000 people said, eh, you know what? I'm done. Let me go watch something else. That's pretty interesting. The low point of the night, we had a tie. First off, we had the 8:45 to 9 o'clock part of the show, Chris Statlander versus Mercedes Martinez. And then we had the antics with Diamante, Willow Nightingale, and then that backstage promo by Toni Storm, that did 387,000 viewers. That was tied for lowest. The other quarter that was just as low was the beginning of hour two. And that was the House of Black versus Action Andretti, Darius Martin, and Lee Johnson. This is now, I believe, the third time that Action Andretti, we're not trying to single him out, but that is the third time that Action Andretti, Darius Martin, or a combination thereof, were the lowest part of Rampage, of Collision. What does that say? You know, AEW may be fond of these guys and may think, oh, you know, they're worthy of the TV time. But consistently, they are the lowest parts of the night. Again, when you don't have that sense of urgency, that, man, if I don't up my game, I'm going to lose my fucking job. You know, and you just get opportunity, you know, and just go through the motions. You know, how's that inside? I know what some people are going to say right now. Well, DT, you know, there's some people behind the scenes that have that hunger because if they can overperform, they'll get TV time. Well, say that to Hobbs and say that to Wardlow and say that to others. There are obvious favorites within AEW. When you have a lot of the wrestlers working behind the scenes, their buddies do get favoritism and get some TV time. You look at the last 4 years, without naming any names, there's at least 12 to 15 wrestlers that we can name that got an excessive amount of TV time that had no business getting that amount of TV time, while other people got zero TV time. So this is obviously a pattern within AEW. But once again, these guys, and I personally feel Darius Martinax and Andretti are very talented. But those guys belong on Rampage, in my opinion. If WWE still had like a Sunday Night Heat and they were in WWE, that's where I would put them. I would put them in NXT. I certainly would not put them on Raw and SmackDown on a weekly basis. So the trend continues. You know, wasn't a tremendous drop, but still, that just goes to show you that, you know, the fans are not as receptive than management. NXT, this week, August 8th, 776,000 viewers. That is the highest rating since April of 2021. Not only that, I don't get into demos ever unless it's something really noteworthy. But just let this sink in a little bit. Their demo, the 18 to 49, is pretty much double of what it was compared to a year ago. So when everybody talks and focuses on that demo, when you double that demo, you're obviously doing something not only right, but something that's getting more attractive for younger viewers out there. Because remember, I think the average age of an NXT viewer, wasn't it like 55 years old? Something like that. I mean, even older than me. But, you know, last week, 717, that was without Rey Mysterio, went up 59,000. So what this tells you is either leading up to the main event match, which was Rey Mysterio in the corner of Dragon Lee, who unfortunately lost his match against Dominic Mysterio, who retained the North American Championship with Rhea in his corner. Rhea Ripley once again getting involved and hitting Dragon Lee with the Women's Championship belt. But, you know, we don't have the breakdown, obviously, yet, because I'm doing a show literally. I started at 15 minutes after the rating came out. It's going to be really interesting to get into those breakdowns on Monday, because one of two things happened. Either they kept a consistent 700,000 plus viewership throughout the entire night, which is what they pretty much did last week, if you remember my breakdown on Monday. Or what happened was they had some pretty low numbers at some points during the show where it was in, you know, maybe the low to mid sixes at the most. And then Dominic's match with Dragon Lee popped 900,000. I wonder if it even approaches, you know, mid nines, which would be a serious accomplishment, because then you're getting into Seth Rollins, Bron Breakker territory with NXT. Something I should remind everyone from a couple of weeks ago. When Dominic Mysterio beat Wes Leaf in the North American Championship, we broke down the ratings of when Rhea Ripley defended her Women's Championship against Taya Valkyrie. We brought up Finn Balor and Damian Priest versus Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes, and we brought up Wes Lee versus Dominic Mysterio. And out of all the members of Judgment Day, Dominic Mysterio scored the highest of all the members. And yes, Wes Lee definitely deserves some credit to that as well. But now you have Dominic retaining against Dragon Lee, and they popped their highest rating in over 2 years. So I am extremely curious to see what kind of number that rating came in for the North American Championship match. Ray looking good. You know, it was a week and a half ago that he had that whiplash in his match with Santos Escobar, got knocked for a loop, and he was pretty much fine. And I thought it was cool to see his interaction with Thea Hale. Because Thea Hale, you know, there's that likability with her that you do want to root for her, that she is one of the ultimate underdogs because of her age. And she's small, you know, but there's other women wrestlers that are the same size. So we really don't factor in her size, but it's more of just the experience. Yeah, but when Ray approached her and she was gushing and she's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And Ray says, you know, I think you're going to be a future champion. That was pretty cool. It was a believable moment. It wasn't just a storyline segment, if you know what I mean. But anyway, some other quick results. Mustafa Ali over Axiom. We had Blair Davenport over Kalani Jordan. And then after the match was over, Dana Brooke went nuts. She attacked Blair Davenport. And then she got a little annoyed at Kalani Jordan. Remember that heel turn that I called a month ago, I think we are on the cusp of that happening. I really want to see Dana Brooke as a full-blown heel in NXT because she'll get a little bit additional freedom that she would not get on a more, you know, manufactured, you know, main roster. All right, so now we get the Heritage, well, Noam Dar's fake Heritage Cup. Tyler Bate wins 2-1, so, you know, he wins Noam Dar's fake Heritage Cup. A little corny, I mean, let's be honest. Confrontation with Trick Williams and Ilya, you know, develops a little bit further. Bron Breakker beats Von Wagner after the match. Von Wagner powerbombs Bron Breakker through a table. We got NXT Heatwave that's going to be coming up soon. So I wonder if we're going to get a rematch between those two. Who knows? Maybe they do a tables match. You know, I like what they're doing with Von Wagner, but he's got to slow down. He's a big guy. You know, he's not, you know, I kind of like, he reminds me of Big John Studd physique, but they don't wrestle anything near like each other. But one of the formulas with these big guys is you slow your shit down. I know you don't get as much TV time maybe as you want, but he's got to slow his shit down. He's got to be more methodical. I liked some of the things that he did yesterday, but he needs to slow it down a little bit more. Just my opinion. Charlie Dempsey and Drew Gulak over Briggs and Jensen. Kiana James over Ivy Nile. And then we had Dominic Mysterio retaining the NXT North American Championship over Dragon Lee. After the match was over, Lyra Valkyria attacked Rhea Ripley. They had a segment earlier in the night. Hey, listen, if they're going to continue something with Lyra Valkyria, I love it. Yesterday, when we were doing Patreon, I was talking, you know, that would be pretty damn cool for Lyra Valkyria if she could get a match against Rhea Ripley on Raw. Or maybe a dark match, or, you know, before Raw. Like I said earlier, without that secondary championship, you know, you got a feel for some of these women. And I think getting a match on the main product. Remember, Roxanne Perez made that appearance on SmackDown, and she did a pretty damn good job. Bron Breakker got an opportunity or two on Raw for a short period of time. I mean, the crowd was very, very light as far as his response at the time because he was still a babyface. I think people were getting a little bit complacent with him. But, you know, getting that kind of a spot. You know what my gut feeling says? Heat wave, it'll probably be Rhea Ripley versus Lyra Valkyria for the Women's Championship again. Sad thing is, though, is I think we know what the outcome of the match will be. Who knows? Maybe we get a mixed tag match. You know, sooner or later, Dominic Mysterio is dropping that championship. But right now, fans want to see him get his ass kicked. Whoever dethrones Dominic Mysterio for the North American Championship, it is going to feel 10 times bigger than what it is. And that's not demeaning to the championship. But the fact that he keeps not only squeaking out wins, but winning because of Rhea Ripley also helping. I mean, that's the storyline, guys. I read every week on social media, what, you know, with Dominic, what the fuck, man? Can he win clean? No. The whole idea is for you to get extremely irritated and agitated that Rhea Ripley keeps helping Dominic win. Now, if I was NXT and Shawn Michaels and want to have a little bit of extra creativity, maybe you could have a match where Dominic Mysterio defends the North American Championship against someone and Rhea Ripley has to be locked in a cage high above the ring. That, I think, would be pretty damn interesting. And Dominic getting his ass kicked and he's calling for mommy. And mommy can't do nothing because she's locked in a cage, you know, suspended above the ring. If they did that with her locked in a cage and the cage was not suspended, you could best damn guarantee that we'll see a segment where Rhea Ripley bends the bars, you know, and somehow breaks the door off. You know, obviously you're not going to do that suspended up in the air because she'll fall and plummet and probably seriously injure herself. So I wonder if they'll do something like that. I think sooner or later we have to have a match where Rhea Ripley is not barred from ringside. That's kind of boring. Barred from ringside. No, lock her in a cage. That's not animalistic. That's not gender abuse. Lock her in a cage. And then we got to see where they put the cage. So, all right, listen. As I said, I'm doing this early today. And I'm actually doing this earlier because I was extremely under the weather yesterday. I didn't even think I was going to do a Patreon show yesterday. We ended up doing 2 hours. I feel a little better today, but still a little bit off. But I definitely wanted to get into a discussion, not only about the LeFisto stuff and the bigger problem at hand, which is the way, you know, the women are used on the main roster. But I also wanted to talk about, you know, that idea of if I could change one thing right now in AEW and one thing right now in NXT, that would be my first choice on both. And again, there are so many other things that we could change to make the companies better. But that kind of would be my first. So, all right, guys, I'm going to jet out of here. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. Feedback, as always, appreciated, good or bad. And again, DonTony.com, download those audio episodes. Really, really important for, you know, just staying in business with this stuff. You know, it's a challenge, but, you know, we're always in the top list, but never, ever content. You know, we definitely appreciate it. I thank you all, and enjoy the rest of your week. Be well.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.